Hi, everybody. It's Chris here from the Gallagate Shots YouTube channel. Just to let you know, as always, this podcast is now part of the 90 Minute Football Network and proudly sponsored by www.pt-4-u.co.uk. Enjoy the episode. Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Gallagher Shots YouTube channel. It's me, Chris Wallace, joined by Matty Shuttleworth and our very special guest tonight, Keith Downey's here.
How you doing, guys?
I'm not bad. How are you doing? Are you exhausted?
Yeah, I'm counting down the days until February the 1st, I have to say. In fact, today I had a rare day off and I managed to get about 10 minutes to look at potential holidays.
When are you booking your holidays for?
literally the minute that transfer window closes. It's crazy at the moment. Listen, I'm sure you guys are aware. You can see everything that's on social media and Twitter and all the links to different players. And we were just speaking before we came on air. There are people who probably would never have been involved with Newcastle before suddenly sort of being the oracle and everything that's going on. And it's difficult for everyone concerned, not least the owners. And it is a long old month. It is tiring. It's not even the people say to me all the time, standing outside the stadium or the training ground, you must be freezing, you must be bored. That's probably the easier part. It's just the non-stop phone calls and messages and check this out and speak to this person and find out about this. And because of social media now as well, everyone's got a voice and it makes it even more difficult to weed through the rubbish to get to the actual news. So it's pretty busy, but listen, I'm sure it's the same for you guys as well, whether you've been at your day job today and coming and doing this at night or whatever. I'm sure it's the same for the supporters as well, who are living and breathing every single minute.
People they think we do this full-time. They don't realise we've got full-time jobs, then do this afterwards. What I want to start with, obviously, I've said in the build-up this, that our interest right now is to what a day is like for you. So your normal typical day when you're working for Sky Sports News, obviously in the past under previous ownership, you've probably had your feet up most of the time when it comes to Newcastle United. I'm guessing it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
I mean, the last I've been here since 2013 in the Northeast, so this is my 17th transfer window, and I have to say in the opening 2 weeks it's been probably busier than the rest combined. It's been crazy. It really has been. Listen, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's great. I think we're all in a place now, and when I say we, I mean you guys as supporters as well, where we're all engaged and we're all enjoying the journey and the ride. Maybe the transfer window hasn't quite been what perhaps the owners would have hoped for. There's still time left to do some business, but listen, we all know how difficult the January transfer window is. Eddie Howe has said it a number of times, how difficult it is. And like previous managers have said the same, Steve Bruce said it, Rafa said it. It is a very, very difficult window to navigate. In terms of myself, every day is different. I was on a day off today. I've been on the phone all day. I've charged it twice. I was late here tonight because I was dealing with something, you know, trying to check something out regarding a transfer. You don't really get a day off. You're on call the whole time. But listen, I'm not complaining because it's fun. It's the sort of thing I wanted to do since I was a young kid. So I'm not going to complain about it. I would rather it was that than I was sitting about with no news to tell and we're on the, you know, transfer deadline day, like in the summer there, and I got sent to Leeds rather than Newcastle because there was nothing happening. So it's changed
me and Matty were talking about that before, and obviously I don't want to obviously speak badly against other Northeast clubs, but 9 out of 10 times you'll probably find yourself in Newcastle on the likes of transfer deadline day. But over the last handful of years, you've either been at Sutton's training ground, or were you at Borough once?
Yeah, I was at Borough 1 year. I had to go down and stay there the night before, and that was when Middlesbrough were in the Premier League. So what I would normally do on transfer deadline day, the night before, I would look at it, I'd speak to people at the clubs, I'd speak to agents, I'd try and find out what we thought there was a chance of happening, and then I would pick what thought was going to be the busiest club. Now, I was at Sunderland in my early days in 2013-14. I was at Sunderland for a couple because they were trying to bring players in. I remember Lee Cattermole one day was on his way down to Stoke and changed his mind and came back up, and they signed a couple of players. I can't remember. I mean, we're talking so long ago. But generally speaking, as you guys well know, under Mike Ashley, he didn't like to do his transfer dealing late, and he wanted players in if he was signing anyone early. Didn't want it because he knew he was having to pay a premium on transfer deadline day. So I just kind of made the decision as to which was going to be the busier club. And then in the summer there, we've had a slight change in terms of some of our reporters at Sky. And I was told I had to cover, I think the guy who covered Leeds was maybe on holiday, my colleague Tim Thornton. And I got told I had to cover Leeds and Newcastle from Newcastle. But I was aware Newcastle were doing nothing. Obviously, didn't want to make too big a deal of it. But I then found out they were going to bring Daniel James in the next day in a big money move. And I thought, you know what? We're going to have more news from down there. So sadly for Newcastle, I went down and covered Leeds United instead. But I don't think there's any debate as to where I'm going to be. I am going to be here. And I would imagine for the next number of transfer windows, I'll be here as well, because I think it's going to be a roller coaster ride over the next couple of years. And I think transfer windows are going to be the pinnacle of that.
Yeah. And what I want to touch on, I know you've spoken about this a few times on other podcasts and obviously shows that you have done. The takeover day.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were at St. James's Park, and I had texted you in the morning saying that there's queues already at the box office.
Did I reply?
You did, aye. Did I? Straight away,
say, because I got home that night, and I had so many. Like, you did. So there you go. I texted you
saying, Keith, I know you're up on the car park. I was, but there's a huge queue at the box office. Fans trying to buy season tickets.
Was that on the 7th, on the Thursday?
So it was the morning before it broke. So it was actually people...
the morning of the 7th.
The morning that it actually broke. So earlier on in the day, people actually obviously knew that was so close to that. What was that experience like for you? Because obviously behind the camera and before the camera goes live, you must have thought, I've got a big job here to announce this takeover.
I didn't sleep the night before. I knew. You just know when you've got one of those big days coming. And I really was playing it all out in my head, how I was going to say it, how I was going to break the news, the way I wanted to do it. And then eventually when it happened, that just went all out my head. And I just kind of went with kind of what came to me at the time. Mm. It was amazing to be part of. It really was. It was a special day, probably one of the highlights of my career in terms of the magnitude of the story. And I think as the news was breaking, because it was such a climatic time, it was like, I think it was 5:15 or 5:20 in the evening. People were finishing work and coming out of school or whatever it was, and they were coming down, and as you know, they were congregating at the stadium. And it just kind of it actually worked out quite well, because normally with these stories, I just love when they happen like that, and then it's, you know, you can kind of just hit the story and it's big. But I think with this, because it built up all day, it kind of added up towards a crescendo. And we were obviously reporting every half hour throughout the day. We got there to 5:20, and then it was just a perfect time for it to happen. By the way, it wasn't planned. It was just the way it happened. They were obviously trying to get the deal all signed off and ratified. And I have to say, I think it only really felt real when I was reading out the statement, and I actually finished the statement and kind of handed back to, I had a presenter up for the dinner, handed back to him. And it was just like this rush of kind of adrenaline just left my body. It was almost like all the years of talking about it and, listen, getting abuse for it, like, because we got it wrong a couple of times and we thought it was done and it wasn't. But you've got to remember, we were going off information that we were being told by people involved who we trusted. So I want to say we, I mean myself and other reporters. So all those years of covering it, all those many letdowns, unless you've got to remember, for us, we all wanted something big to happen as well. Like, it, for the reporters, it was getting a bit, it was getting so stale for us covering the same
thing. Changes your job and lifestyle as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'll be honest with you, I was considering probably leaving and going somewhere else, because I was at a stage where I felt like I'd hit a bit of a glass ceiling in the Northeast. You know, of the three teams, I had one in the Premier League just trying to exist. I've got one that are in League One and they've been there for 4 years, and one in the Championship who were just kind of middle of the table. And I thought, does this job really meet my expectations? But I have to say, since the takeover went through and everything that's followed, it's kind of given me the sort of security and clarity that I want to stay here and be part of what should be an amazing journey. Because imagine covering you guys have been fans for longer than I've been a reporter, but imagine for me covering the last 7-8 years, all of that, and then finally you get the takeover that we've been talking about for 4 or 5 years, and then you leave. So it's kind of just given me that little bit of security that I want to stay here. But that day was an amazing, amazing event. And I think the reason I got a bit emotional about it was because it was all those years of sort of, what's the best way to say it, frustration and pent up, like, you couldn't really kind of answer back to people. And it was always, you have to kind of bite your tongue, and it was really, really difficult. And then also when I was announcing it, I could hear behind me, you couldn't actually see it on the TV, but I could hear the fans who'd congregated at the Sir Bobby Robson statue.
As it's filtering through.
As I'm reading it out, I mean, honestly, I'm speaking right now and I can feel the hairs in the back of my neck standing up. As I was reading it out, I think they were watching on their mobile phone, and there's about a 10-15 second delay in Sky Go, and they're watching it and they were reacting to me reading the statement out. And I could hear them kind of like roaring and cheering. And it was just, it just made me, I think it just really underlined and made me realize, wow, this is a big moment. This, what I'm saying now, is going to change so many people's lives, because you guys are obviously so passionate about your football. And this was just going to change things forever for you. And I think I got to the end of the statement, handed back, and I could feel myself going. I thought, oh my God. And it was like an out-of-body experience. I thought, what's going on here? But I think it's because I knew what I was saying meant so much to so many other people. And then the release of adrenaline. And I handed back to him, managed to hold myself together. He then came back with a second question. I gave a second answer, but by this time I was gone. And I was like, how I don't know how I managed to kind of hold myself together. And I obviously had a lot of stick from the Sunderland fans because, you know, I was at a Sunderland match last
week.
As
usual.
Well, I was at a Sunderland match last week covering, and I was getting quite a lot of stick, I have to say, that I've not had before. And it was quite difficult to take, actually. I was really quite shocked by it. And I know why, because obviously we're covering Newcastle, but I think Sunderland fans have to realise that this is a huge national story. This really is massive.
Yeah, it's worldwide.
Sunderland in League One right now, sadly, for the fourth year, isn't national news for us anymore. Yes, it is for the locals, absolutely, but not for us until they get back up. I've said this a million times, you won't want me to hear this, but I would love all three North East teams in the Premier League. I know you guys are probably happy the way it is, but for me, covering it on a professional point, professional reason, that's what I would want. It is the way it is at the moment, but that day was just, the emotions and everything that came with it was a lot more than I expected. And then obviously the days that followed were great as well. So I would love to do it all again, because it was definitely one of the highlights of my career, and I've reported on quite a few big stories.
I think you're right what you're saying. I think it's one of those moments where you always remember where you were when that news broke.
Where were you?
Well, so, I was actually running down the quayside. I finished
away from St. James.
I'd had these all in the group and the WhatsApp group we have, and they were saying it's happened, it's done, it's happening. Then there was little filters of like, there's been delays, and you're thinking, well, not again. But I just sit on the pessimistic side of the fence, and I'm always just like, just pretend it's not going to happen, and you'll never be disappointed. And then when I saw that my phone blew up just as I was finishing me running, then it was
so I was hovering around St. James Park in the morning, and I thought, I can't stay here all day, there's nobody here. So I came here, and I came sat in the studio, just had a few drinks, just ready, just watching.
Just the usual.
Just drinking at 10 o'clock in the morning. You'll know as a Scotsman. So we just sat here watching Sky Sports, we were just waiting for that moment. So as obviously the feed started going back to you more and more as the day went on, me and Mark, who I was with, I thought, right, we'll start making our way over to St. James's Park now. And this was around about 4:45, and we were on the Tyne Bridge. Watching your feed.
Wow.
We're bang in the middle of the Tyne Bridge when I went
through. That's a pretty special moment. And like,
I'm just saying, I'm getting hairs on you, my neck. Yeah. And like, it was just one of those moments where Mark looked at us and he just went, it's done. Then we're just hugging each other on the Tyne Bridge.
Do you know what's difficult for me is I had that statement for about an hour before.
Did you?
And I had it in my hand on my phone, right? And my battery was running out of my phone and everything. And I had it, but I'd been told by people involved high up, look, this is the statement. This is what we're going to run with when we break it. We'll give it to you a few minutes before we announce it, because they knew it was massive. And it was actually a really good day for Sky Sports News, because we had unbelievable viewing figures. Everyone was following it every hour. Mm. It was like the good old days. It was honestly really, really good. And I had it, and I think I was looking at it, and I was like, oh my God, I've got this like in front of me. But obviously nobody knew yet.
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't even like text my mates who are Newcastle fans, didn't even say. I was like just keeping this to myself. And it was just this surreal thing that I knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of
that moment,
a matter of like just getting the okay that we can say it. And obviously it had to be okayed by not just Mike Ashley, but by the new owners and by the Premier League. So everyone had to give it a thumbs up before we could say it.
Did you get a chance to take the moment in? Because obviously not long after that, you're off to Jesmond Dean House.
So I knew I had the interview. So what happened was I was told stay at Jesmond Dean House throughout the day, mm-hmm. where we were based. Obviously, I knew Amanda was there. We'd spoken to her. We knew she was there and all her people. So that's why I knew it was going to happen. But I have to say, after so many close calls in the past, you've just got that tiny little degree of doubt. And I think when Newcastle,
tell me about it.
Well, I think when Newcastle, you can never like know that it's definitely going to happen. And the last thing I wanted to do was come out and say it's definitely 100% happening. I knew all day it was happening, but I just felt I don't want to be saying that live on air, and then that clip gets used again and again and again. So I went back to it. So basically went through, I knew we were supposed to be getting the first interview with her, and I was going to stay at Jesmond Dean all day. And it got to about 4 o'clock and or 3:30, and I just made a decision myself. I said, look, I had a cameraman at both places and like live facility, and I just said, I'm going to go back to the stadium, because I heard like some crowds had started gathering. And I said, I need to be there. If it breaks in the next hour, 2, 3, 4 hours, whatever, I need to do this at the stadium and not be in what looked like my back garden, the Jesmond Dean House, trying to make it look nondescript. So, and do you know what? It was such a good decision. I don't know what made me do it. I just thought, I'm going back. And I got there, and within an hour, it had gone through. And then obviously we had meant to have the first interview with Amanda Staveley. But I knew that by going to the stadium, I probably wouldn't get the first interview because there were other people going to speak to them. But I thought, you know what? I'll forgo the first interview if that happens. To be at St James's Park announcing that takeover, I thought to be announcing it in a place like Jesmond Dean House where there wasn't very much going on just didn't seem right. And I wanted to be there where the supporters were there and the atmosphere was there and whatnot. So I went back and I ended up not getting the first interview with her, which was fine. I wasn't bothered. I think I got the second, got the interview in the can, back to the stadium. By the time I got back to the stadium, it was just bedlam because obviously it was darkness by now and all the fans had turned up. So, but it was amazing because we were actually doing... announcing it live, and then I think some of the supporters who had gathered, or all the supporters who had gathered, suddenly realised where we were on top of the car park at the Leases Inn, and they came running up, and the presenter Rob, who I was with at the time, was, I think he was a bit spooked by them all run, and he handed back to the studio, and we went straight into a break. I said, mate, I would have just left it, like, it would have been such good pictures, because there was like hundreds of fans, obviously it was cold, but it was a different time. I would have just let it happen, and they came in, they were trampling the mics over, they did turn around, there was two guys on top of the satellite truck, like almost falling over. I've got a video with my phone. I was like, oh my god, I forgot how bad it was. So yeah, that was just, all those moments were so good, and then the days that followed as well. I've got to say, all that was the fun part. This, now that we're in January, doesn't feel like that. I know it's great for you guys talking about all these transfer targets, but for me at the moment, it's just like such a difficult time.
Working for your money now, mate.
God, I know. I need to get a pay rise.
You've just, can I touch on one thing? One question I've got is, you've obviously mentioned how long you've spent in the Northeast. I'm just wondering how thick your skin's had to be over the last few years, because we're an impassioned bunch, not just Newcastle, Sunderland and Middlesbrough. You can give that to all of us, but you know, Twitter is there playing to see where people like you or other people in your line of work will maybe play down a transfer link, the takeover, and people sort of see you as a focal point for their,
I know,
you know, disdain, even though you have nothing to do with it. So how have you dealt with that over the years?
It's so frustrating because I am quite, in general, quite an outspoken person, like in life, away from work. You know, if someone annoys me, I'll just tell them to their face and whatever. And I find it so hard on social media and Twitter to rein that in, because you can get yourself in all sorts of bother. So you're right, you have to be thick-skinned. I get to the stage now where I try not to read too many of the comments. I used to be, when I first started, I was quite obsessed with what people thought and whatever. And now I'm just like, you know what? They can just take me the way I am. I know that when I go to work and I cover Newcastle or any of the other clubs, I do it to the best of my ability. And I know I do it unbiased. And I get so much stick from people now saying, oh, particularly Sunderland fans saying you're a mag or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, I'm just doing it because this is the story at the moment. Mm. And listen, it meant a lot to me covering that, because I've lived in the city for 8 years and I've got a lot of friends who are Newcastle fans, and it's become, the club and the city gets under your skin. I think they would be the same if I was living in Sunderland. Sunderland did when I was covering it as well, and still are to an extent. But I'm not there as much now. So, you get a lot of stick for different things. And do you know what? The people who are now coming up in the street and saying things, oh, thank you so much, like the way you've spoken about us was so great. You've always had a back. Like, can I get your drink? All this kind of stuff are probably the same people that were like abusing me like 6 months earlier. And this is what I know.
Drinks now, though, aren't you?
I know. I've hardly bought one since. But and that's the way it is. It's probably the same people. But listen, football fans are fickle, and I'm one of them myself as well. So I'm not gonna criticize. But you have had to, I have to say, over the years, you've really had to have a thick skin at times. And listen, you need to try and remain professional. If you get yourself bogged down in things like that, like I did probably away at the start a few times, you can get yourself in all sorts of bother.
There's a great question here, one which I haven't even thought of. It's from Lee Major. He says, are you now the envy of the other Sky Sports News presenters?
Well, firstly, I'm a reporter, not a presenter.
Oh, sorry, reporter.
Pete Graves is a presenter.
Oh, is that not? Oh, that's okay. Had to get in there at some point, didn't it?
So, am I the envy? It depends who you ask. Depends which ones you ask. Listen, some of them are like, well, for example, my colleague Tim, who covers Leeds, was up covering that day for me, and he was like, this is mental. He's like, this is crazy. This is... Oh, I don't know if I can tell you this story, actually. I probably can't. But
start now, mate.
Yeah, I know. It's probably not for pre 9 o'clock. But anyway, when he was up covering it, he was just like, "Mate, you ought to hear what those guys down there are saying about you." Like, or some of the Newcastle fans, you know, when the celebrations were going on, and he was having a right laugh. So I think for some, they're like, I don't think they realise how crazy it is, and I don't think they realise how passionate the Newcastle fans are until they actually see it with their own eyes. And I think Tim, for example, that day, and he covers Leeds, who of course are a massive club as well. I think he was just like, wow, this is just like, he couldn't believe it. And he said, your life's going to be changed now, like your professional life moving forward. Listen, the job's a lot different. We've got reporters in London who cover not just one club, but my job's a little bit different to theirs. You know, mine's is, I just cover these clubs up here. At the moment, it's just mainly Newcastle. Sort of 95% Newcastle at the moment, whereas we've got reporters down in London who cover Chelsea, Arsenal, Fulham, whatever. West Ham, they go around them all. So my job is different to that. But I like it, the fact that I'm from Scotland. I can jump in the car at any point, head back up the road to Scotland, and I'm there in 2 hours. But yeah, I'm getting Premier League football.
Yeah.
Touch wood.
Yeah, touch wood. Great shout, mate. you got anything before we move on to the likes of the questions from people who are watching?
No, we'll move on to the questions. I mean, we've already spoke about how busy you are. And for me, one thing I've always been intrigued by people in your position is how you, I don't want you to slag people off, but filter what's credible and what's not credible. Is it a case of just track records?
What do you mean in terms of transfer?
Sources, like, you know, info that you're hearing. Have you ever, like, had your fingers burnt in the past where you've thought, you know, that's a reliable source, and then
it's a really good question. I think it's a combination of all of that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're making judgment calls on a daily basis. You know, when it comes to transfers, as you'll see, the amount of players who've been linked to Newcastle in the last, well, I wouldn't say the last 2 weeks, I would say since the takeover went through in October,
it's five, like, squads worth.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, I mean, at one point I counted over 100, and that was like probably before the window opened. So the amount of players, I mean, some of these guys, half the guys I've not even heard of before. You kind of, listen, you're going to miss a couple out as you go along, absolutely. And you can't get every story. Like, there's so many journalists covering the Northeast patch, both written and broadcast. You're not always going to get the story. There's going to be other people who get it, and everyone's trying to get a piece of it now. And obviously there's all these other journalists who maybe don't cover the Northeast clubs, but they've got ins with certain agents. And most of the time, these stories are coming from agents. Like, don't think for a second any of these links are coming from Newcastle.
Yeah.
All this stuff's coming from out west, really. So that's where it comes from first. So I think I just try to pride myself on getting it right. And listen, we've probably got a few wrong over the years, absolutely. But I personally try not to report anything until we've got two sources on it. There's a lot of people out there, some websites, some people out with the region who will just get something from an agent and whack it out there, but they've got no relationship with the club. They've got no relationship with Newcastle United or the people who run the club, whereas I do have that, and most of the other journalists who cover the Northeast are the same. So we would probably, most of us, try and get some kind of steer from the club as well, our contacts at the club, and not report it until we know we've got it on safe ground. I mean, at the moment, I have to say, since the takeover's gone through and since the transfer window's open, I think that the consortium are so busy at the moment that they're not briefing really at all. We're not really getting, and obviously I think it was pretty common knowledge that the Unai Emery situation happened, because obviously some information got briefed out there. And I don't know whether maybe the consortium feel they've had their fingers burned a little bit, or maybe they just feel they want to do things differently, or probably they're just too busy to be dealing with calls from journalists trying to stand, especially when there's so many different names linked. So this is why there's just a flood of information, because it's almost like open season now, because the consortium aren't really briefing or giving heads up. They are on one or two once they get to a certain stage, like the ones that are done already. And, you know, things like the Carlos deal and other bits and pieces. But generally, you just lose all credibility if you start going, like, if I'd gone to Mike Ashley, for example, with every single one of those names, he'd be like, what are you talking about? If I go to Amanda Staveley with these names as well, so you need to almost just try and sift through and pick out the ones that you think are credible and then try and find out. Listen, you can waste your time with some and look stupid, but you can also miss out on some. So again, it's just judgment calls on a daily basis. And I think all of that just comes with experience. But we're all the reporters who cover the Northeast will be in the exact same boat at the moment. And it's such a difficult situation, because you're weighing up the whole time. Shall I go and check with her? Shall I go? And then, I trust that agent. Do you know, I trust that agent, but do I trust him enough? And, well, I don't know if I trust that agent, but that's a really big name. That sounds like it's going to hurt. It's difficult. It's really difficult.
Do you feel a lot of pressure? Because, like you said, probably Sky Sports News is probably the go-to place for most football fans, almost sports fans.
Yeah.
And when everybody sees the yellow ticker on the bottom, that's when people think, well, there's definitely something in this one. Do you feel that pressure out of that situation?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I'm aware of that ever since I started, that it was sort of when Sky Sports News report it, it's kind of happening. And I think it's important that we keep that. But I think as things move on, you know, situations change. It's difficult to get things out of football clubs. And sometimes you have to just go with your gut or go with one source. Mm. I do myself try to go with two, and that's why you'll not see me reporting about all these different names. And like, I'll see people reporting it, but I won't myself mention it because I'm like, I don't believe. So I'm not going to knock someone's story down and say, I think that's rubbish. Sometimes you would love to, because it's making your nightmare, it's making your job a nightmare. Like sometimes you will go to the club and check something out and they're like rubbish.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not even going to tweet. I'll just ignore it because I'm not in the business of knocking other people's stories down. And I think a lot of the other guys are the same. But then all that does is just create uncertainty for you guys as fans, because you hear the names and you don't know what to believe. And, you know, you've got all the sites who will, like, you know, you've got like NUFC 360 who will like put out every single name that gets mentioned. Mm-hmm. And rightly so, because that's what they're trying to do. Yeah. But they've got obviously a lot of followers, and then people cotton on to it. And then, but I think you guys as fans are getting quite clever now. And I think you're beginning to realize what's got a chance of happening and what hasn't. And I think as this window goes on into the summer, I think you'll get more and more like that. And you'll probably become quite cynical, just like me.
I'm already there. 100%. So I'm just going to open up to you guys that are watching there tonight live. There is nearly 50 of you watching at the moment. So we're expecting a few questions at least. I'm going to start it off because obviously the news which we've seen today, and probably the most active transfer rumour which we're having at the moment, is Diego Carlos. Seems to be Newcastle going back and forwards with bids. He apparently wants to come to Newcastle.
Yeah.
Give us a little bit of a feeling on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, he started tonight, hasn't he, for Sevilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wouldn't bode well, I think. Certainly for getting him in for the weekend, unless they rush something through tomorrow. But you've probably seen the last 2 weeks have kind of followed a trend with the arrival of Trippier and then the arrival of Chris Wood, where the business has been done Monday, Tuesday, they've flown in on the Wednesday, and then they've trained Thursday, Friday, and played in the Saturday. Mm-hmm. So the Carlos deal is behind that point.
Yeah.
They've not even agreed a fee yet. And by all accounts, they're quite a distance apart. Normally when a player says they want to leave, they normally get their way once they dig their heels in. So that, I would say, should work in Newcastle's favour. But it sounds as though they want an exorbitant amount of money. And like, I think clubs are now just looking at Newcastle, know they've got lots of money to spend, or they've got lots of money potentially to spend, and they're just putting an extra 20, 30 million on.
Similar to the Trippier deal, because apparently clubs had obviously offered bids for Trippier.
Well, they were trying
Newcastle
to keep that
a little bit more.
Well, they were trying to keep that so quiet as well, because they were so worried that like a Chelsea or a Man United came in last minute. So they actually did really well. What the situation with Trippier was, he was just so keen to come back and come back to the north of the country. So it was a slightly different situation with him. I mean, Diego Carlos won't know much about Newcastle United, but he'll want to come because he's 28. He'll, one, want to try the Premier League. Two, he's going to get more than double the wages that he's on already. It'll be a last big contract for him at 28 years old if he gets a four-year deal. So that's, of course, why he's going to want to come. It just sounds like they're quite far apart. Listen, never say never. Things can change. But if it does feel as though that'll be really difficult to get done before the weekend, and it might go into next week. If they dig their heels in Sevilla and say, we want the release clause figure, which I think is around 70 million, I don't think Newcastle aren't going to pay that.
Mm.
I think to get him, they're going to have to break their transfer record. They're going to have to break the Joel Linton 40 million to get him. How much more, I don't know. We'll see how desperate they get. But at this moment in time, the fact he's starting tonight, we know there's a gulf in terms of the release clause and what Newcastle are offering. I think there's about £40 million gap. Mm. Perhaps they'll meet somewhere in the middle, but it's a lot of money for a 28-year-old defender who, yes, he's been capped by his country, but only in the Olympics. I had a little chat with Guillaume Balague earlier, and he said, look, from what he's hearing, Newcastle are doing things the right way. They're not wanting to be, they're not wanting to spend huge amounts of money. They're trying to do it and get players for the value. Maybe just a little bit more than what they're worth. The problem is, it's so hard to do that in the January transfer window. You have to almost spend too much to get the players you want. I think between now and the close of play, I think there'll be a lot of movement for Newcastle in the loan market. And when we see loans in the January transfer window, they're normally in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be probably a crazy last 2-3 days, I have to say.
With them, before we get into the question you've mentioned there about the fact Newcastle, they're going to put a Newcastle tax, so to speak, on a January transfer window, really hard to negotiate, like a lot of managers have said. There is fans out there, you know, on message boards and on Twitter who are just screaming for us just to throw money at a problem. I can understand why the owners aren't doing it. And there's been sort of musings from people saying that perhaps they've botched this transfer window already. They didn't have the deals in place going into January. I mean, what do you make of fans saying that? Because for me, it's a bit harsh on A, new owners, and B, you know, you can't just put all your ducks in a row going into such a hard time to make deals.
I think it's difficult to criticise too much because it's January, and like, it is so hard to work in that. Clubs don't want to sell players now. They're happy to do it in the summer. They don't want to do it now. They don't even want to loan out, especially with the COVID situation. Clubs are using their full squad at the moment. You see so many youngsters getting a game because of players missing and stuff. So I think that's kind of exacerbating the situation as well. Listen, I think it would have been a bit easier for the club had they got a director of football in. I think everyone understands that. I think that would have maybe worked a little bit better because they're new to this.
Are you surprised that that hasn't been sold already? Because that was a comment earlier on about the whole director.
Am I surprised they've not got one?
Yeah. This one hasn't been appointed in that role yet.
I am, yeah.
Do you feel as if we fell out a few hurdles with that one?
I thought that would have been the first thing they did.
Yeah. I think everybody was under the same impression.
I thought that would have been the first thing they did. Remember when this takeover happened in October, that it came out of the blue. Like, the consortium were only contacted a few days before to say, look, this is back on now. Mm. Suddenly they had to, like, get themselves up to Newcastle, get things going again. So they're caught out. Originally, when they first came to the table, it was going to be Rafa Benitez. He was the brains behind it. He brought everyone to the table. He was going to be manager, director of football, everything, right? So once October comes and they don't know, they don't have someone in place there. But listen, that doesn't mean you can't get someone in place within the next few, 2-3 weeks before you get a manager in, or around about the same time. Yeah. Interesting, listening to Eddie Howe, he said to us a number of times in press conferences that he'd be happy working whoever the director of football is. And that says to me that he would like someone in that role, and he would work with them, because he's done that before with a technical director at Bournemouth. So I think he's had to, in recent weeks, had to have more of a hands-on role than probably he expected, due to the absence of a director of football. And I think that's making things more difficult for them as well. Time will tell as to why that is the reason. But I think it probably would have made things a little bit easier, because the people who are involved at the top and doing these deals haven't done this before. And it's no slight on them. It's just it's something new. And we would all be in that situation in terms of not having the right contacts and knowing how to speak to people and knowing how to sort of close out a deal when it comes to a football player, which is a lot different to anything else, I suppose, any of these people have been involved in before.
I think news was reported as well that Dan Ashworth was given permission to speak to the club as well, but that went really quiet.
Well, he's given permission to speak, and he's had talks, but there's no answer. If you look at all the moves for any of the players, managers, they've all kind of taken the same sort of direction. Look at Eddie Howe; he was spoken to well before he actually got the job. And I think what they try and do, the owners, is they speak to a number of people before they make a decision. As we know, they spoke to Unai Emery, they spoke to others. I can't remember, there was a few of them at the time. So much has happened since then, I can't remember. But
Fonseca was one of them.
Yeah, he's one. Yeah, they spoke to a number of different potential candidates before choosing. It seems like they're maybe doing similar, rather than just selecting one and going for that person. And again, that is because the consortium haven't worked in football before and worked in football circles, so they don't know these guys.
Yeah.
So they're going off these guys from their interviews rather than, if you've got a director of football in there who knows the game and knows the English game, they know who to go for. Yeah. You just target who you want and you go and you get there. But it's a completely different setup at the moment. And listen, I suppose it's something you're just going to have to get used to and hope that you can just muddle through until the end of the season and stay in the league.
If we do go down, one question here, talking about these signings we're bringing in, it's all good and well, but if we end up, the worst happens, would you think players like Kieran Trippier have things like relegation clauses in the contract?
Eddie Howe said he's not.
He's not, no?
No. Fair so point. Eddie said to us he's not. He said he's here for the challenge, whatever league Newcastle are playing in. Chris Wood, he's a sort of player who could... You can imagine doing a good job in the championship. Yeah. So he could score goals in there, and I think he would play there no problem. Listen, if they go down to the championship, they're gonna throw everything at it to make sure they come back up again. I think you'd only be down for one season. I mean, it would be a strange old experience, I have to say.
Yeah.
Like away to Rotherham or whatever it is when you're essentially the richest club in the world. But you do what you have to do. But yeah, Eddie Howe said Trippier doesn't have a release clause, and he's here for the long term.
Do you think moving forward they might try to use that as a sort of bait to get people in?
I think if it gets desperate, they might have to do that. Mm-hmm. But so far they've not. But I'm saying desperate. What are we? 11 days until the window closes. So maybe next week if they're back bringing players in. But I have to say, I don't think I can see them bringing in a centre back for a fee, or one more player for a fee, whether it's 30 million, 40 million. I think beyond that, it's going to be loans. Mm. Mm. Even if you get Jesse Lingard, you know, I can see it being a loan fee to Man United until the end of the season, whatever that may be, 10 million. I don't know. That was the next question,
Jesse Lingard, and you mentioned earlier that's going to be done later in the window. Do you think one of the reasons why that is because maybe Man United and Jesse Lingard are waiting for a better offer from a club that's in a better position than Newcastle United in the Premier League?
I just think he's got a big decision to make. I think it would be more Lingard weighing up his options. Mm. I don't think there'll be any problem with wages. I think Newcastle pays wages, no problem. But I think he had a really good time at West Ham and enjoyed being up there at the top of the table. I'm just not sure if Man United would allow him to go to a rival.
Yeah.
And Newcastle right now aren't really a rival. No. I mean, you've played them twice now already. It's not even as though you're going to play them again. So all that kind of adds up to this being a good move. He's close to Kieran Trippier as well, so that might sway him a little bit. But if it's a loan deal to the end of the season, that ticks every box, because that means that should you get relegated, it's not like he's going to then have to play in the Championship. So that could work, a loan deal to the end of the season, pay Man United a loan fee. Now, you might have to pay a premium to get him until the end of the season. But however, despite all of this, I just don't think that's a priority. Now, I know the second half was poor against Watford, and maybe someone like Lingard might have controlled the game a little bit more or added something else. But for me, it's the priority is to get in a defender, because you know yourself how bad it's been recently at the back.
The spine of the team for me, I think a central midfield is just as important. Centre half is the priority, but I feel like controlling the game, you control that from that area just in front of the back four, and we have no players that are going to put the foot on the ball.
We'll flip around.
Thing I was going to say, the interesting thing with Lingard is, obviously, I think there's people saying already that, you know, bid's been rejected and all this kind of thing. I don't think it's a case of, like, official bid, reject, official bid. I think they're probably just in discussions with Man United. And it's this old thing of, when is a bid a bid? You know, it's semantics, it's transfer semantics. And it's probably the same with the Carlos thing. I mean, I think we've been saying there's been two bids already. There's probably been more figures than that discussed as they work towards where they're both trying to get to. And I think it's probably the same with Lingard as well. I think they're just in talks until they come to some agreement, or they both walk away.
When we're saying discussions, who's doing the discussions from Newcastle side?
So you've got, so essentially at the moment, you've got Amanda Staveley, her husband, Merdad. You have Steve Nixon, head of recruitment, and I think Eddie Howe's involved as well. Mm. I don't know as to what Nick Hammond's role is at the moment. I know he was involved at the start and helping things. I don't know if he's quite as hands-on at the moment.
That advisory role, wasn't it? Apparently.
Yeah, that's essentially it. I mean, you know, I know Lee Charnley probably got a lot of criticism, and he probably took a while to get deals done, but he was experienced in kind of getting deals done in the end. So since he's left, you've not got that experience there anymore, and it's not really anyone there that's got that. I mean, obviously Eddie Howe, yes, but I mean, he's got his hands full in the coaching side of things to be dealing with all that as well. So it's difficult, and that's why I'm saying muddle through until the end of January, get who you get. But I think if you had a director of football in place, that would have just taken a lot of pressure off the owners. When I say the owners, I mean the owners that are based here.
Yeah.
Not PIF. I mean, PIF are obviously just kind of leaving it to this consortium who are here to get on with.
There's been a few questions over the last 10 minutes here about outgoings, and we haven't really heard anything about players leaving the club. Do you think it's a case where the club are thinking, we need to keep the squad full until we bring a handful of people in?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there'll be, I think, players, if you do get a couple more in, players will go. Because there's no point having players who aren't going to be there. They'll loan players out or whatever. So, but the squad is so thin at the moment. You know yourself, you're not going to... Like, look at someone like Sean Longstaff, for example. He started the last couple of games. Obviously, it was that bid from Everton for him. Mm. He's coming towards the end of his contract. Yes, Eddie Howe said that he'd be keen to keep him. But, you know, if they say, for example, you brought in two midfielders, he's the sort of player that might be allowed to go. you know, and he might fancy a bit of a change as well. But there's no point in doing that now when the squad's so thin. So again, I think it's going to be a lot of last minute wheeling and dealing both in and out.
Yeah. Anything? You saw anything in them?
I mean, I've just a lot of people thinking that, you know, people have commented saying about how people in this culture of Football Manager and FIFA think that deals are so easy to do these days. Like, you know, you've just talked about semantics of transfers.
Yeah.
Putting bids in. I don't know if you've seen a lot of comments where people think it's just a case of you put a bid in, it gets rejected, you put another bid in. But really, it's probably just locked in talks, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play.
That's essentially what it is. And I think that's changed in recent years. And you've got to remember now, it's not just two clubs working together. Like, there's so many agents and intermediaries and people involved, and messages are getting passed on through them. And it's a lot messier a situation. And obviously agents are getting cuts of everything, and they get the percentages and all this kind of thing. So it's a lot messier a situation, and it takes a lot longer to get a deal done. That is why something like the Kieran Trippier deal was so perfect for Newcastle, because he wanted to come here and wanted to come home, and that just made everything easier. And to be fair to Atletico Madrid, they were like, well, if the player wants to go, we're not going to keep him. Yeah. Whereas Sevilla right now are like, they're a selling club. Yes, they're a selling club, but they're only going to sell if they get what they believe is the right amount of money. They know Newcastle have got money, so they know they can just dig their heels in with Carlos for as long as possible. So you need everyone to be on your side. They were lucky with the Chris Wood situation that Newcastle were made aware of the release clause. Had they not been made aware of that, would they have paid 25 million for him? Probably not. Yeah. But I think they just thought, right, at least we're paying the 25 and that's it. There's nothing. And they desperately wanted him for that Watford game. Now, in the end up, it didn't really make that much of a difference, but they wanted to give it every opportunity.
Do you think Trippier will be our marquee signing?
Oh, God, what a question.
It's not mine, somebody said it. I would like to take credit for it, but no.
Would you say Trippier would be a bigger signing than Lingard?
It's a tough one, that, isn't it?
You're just throwing tough questions back out an hour, yeah?
Considering what...
Mate, I'm used to normally asking the questions.
Considering what Trippier has done in the most recent past, but then again, what Lingard's done, everyone thought he was finished.
But then if you sign Diego Carlos and it's your record transfer, that has to be your marquee signing.
True.
But then you probably didn't... I mean, I didn't really know much about him.
People put marquee on a name these days rather than a price, I think.
Yeah, I think Trippier, in terms of what he brings... around the place. England international.
Yeah.
I think just what takes it off slightly is he's, no disrespect to him, he's a fullback. Yeah. So, like, you know, if your marquee signing's a fullback, unless it's someone like, I don't know, like Roberto Carlos back in the day, you know, someone like, I don't know, Cancelo now, who's more than a fullback, you know, he's a midfielder as well. But probably, and that shows how difficult the window is. But then, listen, Trippier's not, you could see on Saturday, he's a good player in terms of the way. Yeah. Juice of the ball. And
I think he's head and shoulders above everyone in black and white on that pitch.
Yeah,
the way he's communicating and the way he's trying to get everyone organised.
You can see him being a future captain.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Was there much in that, the Gussens link, Atlanta? Because obviously, I know Sky Italia have another the greatest reputations.
Yeah, so we were told that from Sky Italy. I think there probably was some interest.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how far it went. I think there's probably been interest in a lot of, like, the list. I think the list is pretty long. Mm-hmm. Probably working their way down the list.
Yeah. I mean, he was one that, I mean, if it was looking like likely, I'd be very excited because I've seen him play a few times. He's very, very good. But
I was told last week, very unlikely.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean there was no interest.
Uh-huh.
But I think there's been lots of players that's been interesting, but then it only goes so far when they realise like how difficult it would be to get them out of there. But obviously, any agent worth their salt right now, as we've alluded to already, wants their player linked with...
Mention Newcastle's name.
Yeah, helps them. And I'd imagine that might be another one of those.
Yeah, we'll start wrapping this one up there. So if anyone does have a couple more questions, we'll quickly go through them. A lot of questions in relation to obviously Newcastle are going to find it difficult just because of January transfer window anyway. But do you think the current situation, obviously being in the relegation zone, do you think that's massive?
Oh, it's magnifying it hugely. I think if you get through to the summer, you'll find the window a lot easier.
I think that.
Yeah. Like, honestly, well, like, it's a January transfer window. And then also, I mean, your second, if the Burnley match had been on the other night against Watford and they won, you would have gone bottom of the table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how serious this situation is. So I think that is massively magnified. And Eddie Howe knows that. He knows that himself. Had you got 3 points on Saturday, you would have been out of the bottom three Aurea look better for attracting players. And I think there were so many people who were saying before that game, Newcastle will be fine. You're getting the players in a win on Saturday. You don't get that win, and suddenly you're like, oh God, this is it's like on a knife edge at the moment. And yeah, absolutely, because players aren't going to want it. Players would want to come here and play in the Premier League. They don't want to come here and potentially play in the Championship. And Newcastle do not want to sign players who want to have a relegation clause. So it's this horrible kind of situation where you can't find a perfect scenario. It's so difficult to find the right players who want to be here, who want to come for the right reasons, especially in January. You've been really fortunate with Trippier, and then Woods wanted a change, and you've activated this release clause. But I think we all know that Trippier was, like, in terms of marquee signing of those two. There's a lot of players right now who'll be like, I'd love to go to Newcastle. I'd love to go there. It sounds like it's a great project, but while there's the threat of going to relegation, going down to Championship, and they don't want players who have a relegation clause, I'm not going to bother going there. You'll probably find, come the summer, if you stay up, all these guys will be desperate to come because you're starting from scratch and you've got a blank canvas to work from. But yeah, that is making things hugely difficult, the position you are in the league, and it's obvious to see, and you can almost see that in Eddie Howe's face actually when he's talking about it.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating, doesn't it? Obviously, you alluded to there on the likes of Tego, it's a last minute thing where you, by the way, it's back on. And
but you know, the minute it went through, see when the takeover went through, it's one thing I vividly remember from that day and the next day. I just kept saying on air, I said, look, we're all going on about this, but Newcastle are currently sitting wherever you were at that time.
We're in the relegation.
18th, I think. You're 18th, you've not won a game yet this season. And I kept, it makes no difference. This is nothing if you're going to be getting relegated. Not nothing, but it's just, obviously, it sets everything back a little bit. The priority right now is to get wins. And I feel like we're still in the same position. Only one win later in how many games? 11, 12 games since then?
So we're sort of shifting in the likes of chances created and things like that. But
it's the points from winning positions lost as well. You saw that the other day, 21 points. I mean, I know you can't take that as gospel, because winning positions, we were winning 1-0 against Liverpool, you know, so that was never going to be a win. But there has been points where, you know, the Southampton game especially, under Steve Bruce, that was a kick in the teeth. And, you know, the little bits like Jacob Murphy's 1-1 against Watford.
Yeah, forget about that one.
These are all fine margins that all add up in the end.
Just put it in there.
I think we've rode our luck, and perhaps the previous coach sucked all the luck out of us.
When you had a lot of luck under Steve Bruce, absolutely. But it does look as though, and I think Eddie alluded to it the weekend, it does look as though the players are maybe a little bit of a mental block at the moment, and they get that goal up and they don't really know how to play. Just keep playing the same way. If the players are going to play defensively, essentially, like they did in the second half, just chuck another defender on. Just sit in and take. And I think you guys would have taken a 1-0 scrappy win.
100%. Definitely.
100%. I'll end on this question in regards to transfers. Sven Botten, another one whose name we've heard God knows how many times. People thought that was obviously we're unbelievably close to getting close with the fee, apparently.
Yeah, I was after the Cheltenham game, I had people went out for a couple of beers afterwards, and people kept saying, is Sven Botman coming? I said, he'll be here on Wednesday. Just kept saying, I kept bumping into people in Stack. I was like, he'll be here on Wednesday. And then the Monday morning, I was like, oh God.
What, in Stack, you mean?
I was telling people in Stack, and then I must have told a load of people, and then come Monday, I was like, God, I hope they can't remember what I was saying. And listen, it looked like it was going to happen, and he was the number one choice, but the club have just said, no, if he'll probably come in the summer if you stay in the Premier League. You know, I mean, the club are desperate to get him. Head of recruitment really, really likes him, Steve Nixon. So does Eddie Howe. You can see him coming in the summer, but you need to get to the summer and be in the Premier League. And you're going to have, do you know what? They're going to have to take a couple of gambles on players. They're going to have to take a couple of chances.
Speaking of gambling, if you were to put money as a guess, how many signings we're going to get from here at the end of the transfer window? How many more players we're going to bring in? I'm not going to, obviously.
Are you going to quote me on this?
I won't quote you.
No, I don't mind.
This is a guess, ladies and gentlemen. It's a guess. It's not an informed opinion.
So, what signings are including loans?
Just including
new
loans,
additions.
How many
additions,
bodies?
New faces.
Get the door,
new faces. Right?
On top of what you've got already.
Yeah.
I think another 3.
That would have been my
two loans and a signing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take that.
It'd have to be.
I would be surprised if it's any less than that.
Yeah. Is that 3?
I would go 3 or 4. I'd go 3 or 4.
We need for what we need. It's definitely. I think it has to be at least 3 or 4.
At least one centre back.
Yeah.
I think you're bringing someone who can play centre back, left back, potentially, but that's not a necessity. So that's potentially two. I think you're bringing a midfielder, and I think you're bringing another forward.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I would ask for.
And I think a couple of those will be loans. At least two of those.
It'd have to be one from abroad and one from domestic. Is it only one domestic loan, or is it? Can you have more than one?
Two, is it?
It's two. So you've got
two over season two.
So who've you got at the moment?
We don't have any loan at the moment.
No, so you've got two options. I'm saying three because I'm being conservative.
Yeah.
I'm saying three because I'm being conservative. But potentially four.
Is that three that comes straight in the starting 11? You would hope so.
Centre half well, centre mid well, striker maybe off the bench.
Ben on Wilson, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so a couple of questions just about you. Mm-hmm. So this one is from So Logic says, was wondering what drew you into journalism and sports journalism.
Since I was a kid, like all I've ever, I was obsessed with football. Like literally I was encyclopedic knowledge. It's amazing how the older you get, the less you kind of like have that. Like I've forgotten half of it now, but like I used to like little things like, you know, your sticker album. I look now at my Panini 1989 sticker album. Someone can put a hand over the name and I'll look at like someone from 1989 and I can just tell them like some Luton Town midfielder.
Actually got the Panini sticker.
Oh, yeah. Tell you what, I'd honestly back myself.
I'll find it, mate.
Yeah. I've got completed. So I used to do things like my dad would turn down the TV and I would commentate on the match and things like that. And like, just used to always do that when I was young. I was obsessed with reading newspapers. I used to like, and I had a paper round when I was quite young, and every Sunday morning I would come back and I'd have a copy of each and I would read cover to cover all the sport and I would pore over everything. I was obsessed with transfer news, obsessed with match reports, and I wanted to be a football writer back then. And a number of people kept saying to me, oh, you'll end up doing TV. And I was like, oh, no, I want to be a writer. And then I just happened to stumble into TV. And I think once I started doing it, I thought, you know what, this is probably more what I should be doing, because I talk quite a lot. So that's why I ended up doing that. But listen, like so many other people who are involved in journalism or doing journalism at university or doing podcasts like yourselves or whatever, it's just purely from a love for the game. And I had so many knockbacks over the years for jobs and, you know, I can remember coming down for a job at the Chronicle when I was about 22, 23 and not getting it. And jobs at different like local papers here, there and everywhere and getting knocked back at jobs. And then you just find a way to get through. And then if you just keep knocking at doors and you're good enough, then the opportunities arise. And I have to say, coming down and doing this has just been, it's been amazing. It really, really has. And like the last sort of 6 months or so has made all the sort of toils and troubles of the previous seven years worthwhile. Because it's been amazing to be part of.
No, who's your team, Keith? Who's your team?
Heart of Midlothian.
Heart.
Yeah.
Fair play. Yeah. Right, I just had someone ask there, yeah. I mean, that's not exactly,
although, do you know what? It's getting to the stage now, and this is really bad. I'm embarrassed to say this because it's a love of supporting Hearts that's got me into this job. But sometimes you get so obsessed with what's going on in the Northeast, it'll get to Monday morning, and I'm like, what was the Hearts score at the weekend? I don't even know, like, because you get so sort of engrossed in everything that's going on here, and this is your life now. I don't really take too much notice of it. And I'm quite embarrassed about that, because it was a love of Hearts that got me involved in it. But yeah, I'm a Hearts fan, but I mean, I probably only get up to a handful of games a season now. Mm. So
is that stand finally finished? Last time I was there,
it's finished. Yeah. or the new one on the along the main. Oh yeah, it's been finished for a couple of years now.
Yeah. The last time we played Newcastle, played them in pre-season under the referee.
Oh yeah, and it was nothing there.
It was just a scaffold. Yeah, and like there was people like in Lumo jackets just watching the match from the top of
it. Probably half the Newcastle fans as well. It's an amazing stadium, Tynecastle.
Yeah, it's nice.
It really is good. And I've always had an affinity for the clubs down here. I mean, because living grown up in Edinburgh, Newcastle is your closest city to Edinburgh, so we quite often come down and go to matches because it was a Premier League game. I actually remember going to Sunderland Newcastle at the Stadium of Light. Came up as a memory actually on Facebook the other day from 2011, I think, when Shola Amiobi scored the late equaliser. Yeah. Was it 2011?
Demo ball, Mr. Pelton, that one.
Yeah. So like I'd come down and go to like the odd game, so I've always been kind of aware of it and always kept a close eye on things down here. But yeah, I feel quite bad that I don't really get up to Edinburgh to see the games as much now. But listen, when you're involved in this and you're doing games every weekend, it's difficult
to do. Well, hard well wouldn't get out of
it. Really is, yeah.
So just a couple more, just random ones. Is best gift you've been given whilst you've been out on the job?
Alan Sir Maxim gave me a watch the other week.
He's giving everybody watches.
I'm joking. Best gift I've been given.
Yeah.
Oh my word. Do you know what? Like the bet. This is going to be really cheesy. But since the takeover's gone through, the amount of people who have just come up and said thank you so much for like covering the club and being respectful and the way you've done it like over the last number of years. Thanks for sticking with us. Like thanks for like. We've kind of given you abuse and we've got onto you, but and we're aware we've done it. But thank you so much for sticking with us and thanks for the way you've done. And that to me means more than anything. Honestly, it really, really does because it's been quite humbling. Like the amount of people, even when the two, three days or week after the takeover, people coming all the way up just to like say hi and get a photo and just have a chat for a minute. And that's why I'll always have time for people because like the way everyone was around about that time. And I know everyone was happy and they were probably like drunk half the time because we were drinking for a week, but it was just that means more to me than anything. Just the nice words and people saying thanks and you're doing your job well.
Finally, can't remember who said it, but it wasn't too long ago, and I apologize. Most famous person in your contacts on your phone.
Oh God, do you want to go through it? Oh my God, this could take a while. This right? God,
there must be one that comes straight to the.
I'm just checking in case I've maybe deleted them. I just hang on. You know when you get a new phone and like you lose half your numbers. Oh God, we could be here for a while. Do you want a most famous pair? Oh God, right. I'll just start scrolling from the top, right, and see who we get to. Right. Well, I don't know. I've just there's a Advocaat, Dick Advocaat.
Dick Advocaat. Forgot about him.
Is he famous?
Is he?
He's more famous than me. Are you, Chris?
AJ. I don't think it's Anthony Joshua. I don't know who it is. I've right. just got saved as AJ. Could be anyone.
Anti Jan.
Yeah. I don't know who it is. Right. Who are we? Among it is Jose Altidore. God, this is terrible. It's all Sunderland players.
Yeah.
Shola. Right. I mean, Among it A, right? This could take a long time. I can't.
Why don't you just spin it, right? Just spin scroll and stop and just say you're the most famous one on there. Right. Stop now. There's going to be nobody on that screen. Yeah.
Aidan McGeady. I don't know what to say.
The Sunderland fans have the gall to say that you're all new asshole. No, right,
hang on. You can use this as evidence where people say, oh, don't cover Sunderland. There we go.
Tell me when to start.
Right now.
Go. Oh my God.
It's going to be the one, isn't it?
I took an anchor.
Oh, well, there we go.
Shall we give it up?
This could take forever, this.
I was going to say that AJ was that AJ wasn't Adam Johnson, was it?
Oh.
Auntie will go for Auntie Juno.
I'm trying to find someone Newcastle related. This is terrible.
You had Shola.
Oh, of course, yeah.
You had Shola.
Do you know what, mate? I'm only at M. There's so many names in here.
I love that every single one.
I feel like every single one. There's so many I want to say to you, but I don't want to say. Well, here's a good one. Here's a good one. I'm still at M. Just got here. Good one for you guys. Okay. Fun favorite of yours, Steve McLaren.
Oh my word!
We'll take Steve McLaren, I suppose.
So we've had two ex-Borough managers.
Ali McCoist, Glenn McCrory.
That's a good one.
Ali McCoist, you happy with that?
Yeah, we're happy with that.
Yeah, he's been absolutely quality.
Yeah.
Every time he's been on him and John Champion. It's been so good. He needs to be the second commentator on every game, I think.
I've got a couple of good Ali McCoy stories, but there's not time to tell them.
Different
one. Maybe the next time. Yeah. Couple of really funny ones, actually.
It's Amazon Prime he's on, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's on everywhere.
Oh, yeah, he's on.
he is literally on everywhere.
Right, thanks everybody who has been watching. Thanks, Keith, for joining me tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, mate.
No problem whatsoever. Everybody who has been watching, like I said, thank you very much. There's nearly been 700 years at one point there, so it's an absolute joy to have all you joining us tonight as well. If you do want to like the video, appreciate it. Huge. If you want to become a member, even better. You do get early access to certain videos. Becoming a member, you get the monthly podcast with myself and Ryan Taylor as well, which it's a good laugh, that one. Have you watched it yet, buddy?
I haven't, no.
Of course you haven't. thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
See you later.